new beginning.
All right, welcome to the Grief Dreams podcast. My name is Sean Ram alongside Joshua Black. Joshua, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Sean. Christmas is over, New Year's is over, and here we are, 2018. Hopefully everyone had a great Christmas themselves in the holiday season and had time to relax. And if you've lost a loved one, to think about them and just remember those times you had together and what they've, how they influence your life as you move forward. So yeah, it's really good. I'm really excited to what this year has in store for all of us.
It's going to be a very exciting year. And I know you wanted to promote something that you're going to be involved in very shortly. Do you want to talk about this? Let the people know.
Sure, Sean, I'll let the people know. So as in our update episode, I'll be doing a talk in BC. And what's exciting about this, it's my first talk actually talking about grief dreams and helping people explore how to work with dreams, especially of the deceased, with the bereaved. So yeah, so I'm coming to town. So if you're in BC or you know someone in BC, you might want to share it with them just because I don't know how often I'm going to be down there. So it's just really exciting. So a lot of the information's on the griefdreams.ca website, but I'll just give you a little lowdown. So there's the morning presentation. It's in Chilliwack, BC. And so it's about like 40 minutes, I believe, from Vancouver. And so the first one's just for the public, and that's 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And then the afternoon workshop is from 1 p.m. to 4:30. And you can go to the Chilliwack Cultural Center website, and you can get the tickets there. So the tickets are pretty cheap, $10 for the morning, $20 for the afternoon. And it's more or less just to cover the cost for the hospice, because they've spent some money trying to put this on. And so it's really just to reimburse them to help them out in the future.
Great. Yeah. And I'm sure people are going to get a lot out of that, you know, very low cost to essentially get pretty much a full day of some amazing topics, some conversations and what have you, stories and learnings. And, you know, who's it for? So who would you, if you were inviting people to this, who would you invite?
I'll invite everyone, because like, I don't know who wouldn't I, but the better question is who wouldn't I invite? So yeah, at the end of the day, it's anyone who's like, especially for the morning event, it's really to raise awareness on the topic. It's, I titled it 10 things I've learned about grief dreams from researching it. And so there's a lot of information that anyone will know, because for the most part, what I'm finding in the research is that most people will have a dream of the deceased sometime in their life, either from pet loss, human loss, pregnancy loss. And so I'll be talking about all that stuff and all the sort of things that I've learned. It'll be a question period, because I know a lot of people have questions on this topic and about their dreams. So it's for them and anyone who's actually in the field. So maybe you haven't had a dream yourself, but you're working with the bereaved or even the dying, and it'd be good for them also. So because the reality is no one is really trained in this area, just because no one has really done research in this area. So this is going to be the first time probably in BC anyone's really talked about the actual subject. So yeah, I'm just happy. So if you know anyone, you know, please come out. And if you're a fan of this podcast, you know, I'd love to meet you when we come down there. So Jade also, if you remember Jade Black, she's also going to be talking with me, which is nice. And she's also on the podcast every now and then. So it'd be great to meet you guys. And so I know we're talking a little long in the beginning, but I think it all relates in the sense of stories. And that's really what it's about. And so we have a special guest who's going to be talking about some stories.
Absolutely. Very excited to have on this individual. Her name is Eileen Doyon, and she is an author. Her book series is called Unforgettable Faces and Stories. So she's released 7 books in that series, Dedications, Dads and Daughters, 2013. That's when it was released. Keepsakes, Treasures from the Heart, Best Friends, Forever and Ever, Pet Tales, Unconditional Love, and another one that was listed on Amazon's bestseller list, Letters to Heaven, which was also listed on, and another one also listed on Amazon's bestsellers list, The Second My Life Changed Forever. And most recently, Starting Over, Stories of New Beginnings. So her name's Eileen. Visit her website, www.unforgettablefacesandstories.com, and join her Facebook page, Unforgettable Faces and Stories, and follow her on Twitter, @facesandstories. So Eileen, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. And you did a fabulous job with all that information. I appreciate that immensely.
Thank you. I appreciate that as well.
And so, yeah, it's amazing, like who we interview and what they've done. And it seems like you've done so much so far just in writing. And I have so many questions, but the first one is, what started you into writing about this stuff? Because you wrote 7 books. And if you give us an idea on, you know, like, did you just one day wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to write a book today? Or was it something you trained? Like, how did that come about?
Great question. Well, this I will tell you, and this ties into my whole theme, if you will. But my dad passed away in 2011 of lung cancer, and I was with my dad till the end. And I was daddy's little girl, loved him dearly. And I had lost my mom and my brother back in 1981, both of them. My mom died of a massive stroke in July, and then my brother was in a car accident a few months later in November. And I never really grieved them. I was in my 20s into my career. And I think what I did was I never grieved because people really don't teach you how to do that. And I just built up a wall and blocked it out and boosted my career. And when my dad passed away in 2011, it was just him and I, obviously, and I loved him dearly. And it was like a piece of my heart was torn out. I was very depressed. I was very in a very dark time in my life, but I was smart enough, Sean, to know that I wasn't right. So what did I do? I Google searched and said, how do I get out of this? You know, what do you do when you lose someone? And it said to write in a journal. And so I started writing in a journal, and I did that for about 2 weeks. And I just said, this is not for me. It's not enough because of my personality. You might get a little bit of a flavor of that in me speaking, but I had to do more. So I said, my father fought in World War II. He was part of the Greatest Generation. His boots hit Iwo Jima when he was 17 years young. He quit high school and fought at Iwo Jima for 31 days. Out of the battle for 36 days, and very dedicated to the military. But anyways, I said to my husband, I'm going to write a book, a tribute about my father. And my husband said, oh, that's a great idea. And I looked at him and I said, well, no one's going to read it but me, you and I, right? And he kind of chuckled and he said, probably. And so I really thought about it, Sean, and said, you know, if I am hurting so bad and if I want to do a tribute to my father, there has to be other women out there that feel the same way. So I said, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to reach out to my friends and to other women that have lost their father that have served in the military and do a tributes and dedications to our fathers. And I did that. So I reached out to mostly my friends from high school because our fathers were mostly had fought in World War II and went to Facebook and communicated with friends on Facebook, and I put together Dedication Dads and Daughters. And while I was doing this, I was getting so much feedback from people that said, oh my God, Eileen, I can't believe I knew my father fought in the war, but I never knew he did this, this, and this. And I had all this information about my dad all over the place, but now I have it compiled so I can give it to my relatives, my kids, my grandkids. And I looked at my husband and I said, I think I've got something here because it's making me feel better and it's making other people feel better with people that they've lost. And my dad died in March of 2011 and I lost an uncle in August of 2011 from lung cancer as well, kind of ironically. And I inherited my grandmother's chandelier that used to hang over, you know, for celebrations. And, you know, we just had Christmas. And, you know, and I still remember that chandelier hanging over her dining room table. My grandfather was all Italian. My grandmother was all Irish. So, you know, the hands would go and the pasta would go. And, you know, and I still remember seeing everyone and what they wore basically around the table. And I said to Danny again, I said, if I feel like this about my grandmother's chandelier, people have to feel the same way. And in putting those two books together simultaneously, I said, I think I'm going to do a book series and continue doing this and see where it goes and how many people I can help. Thus, Unforgettable Faces and Stories was born.
Wow, that's incredible. So you felt this compulsion almost, because
I did. From
like listening to this, it seems like you understood a little more after your father's loss of me trying to get over it, you know, and then what's helping you is these stories and, you know, obviously positive things and memories, you know, you're kind of in the middle of all that. And it seems like you had a moment where you're like, wait a minute, if this is helping me obviously deal with this, you know, why can't I push this further and help others? And that's an amazing thing, because not a lot of people go that route. Not a lot of people make that connection and even want to go further and help out society. But, you know, you decided to do that. What kept you in it? Because, you know, it's not just the first book, you've written multiple books after. Are you still as passionate and motivated into kind of helping out people?
I am. And I'll tell you about my next theme that I will be working on this year. But I am passionate because I think that pain is a gift. And I had so much pain of loss from my father. And even though he was 86 when he passed, and I feel very blessed and fortunate that he was alive for that long, but my heart goes out to people that loses someone that they love. And every person's story from my book, I bond with that person because they are sharing something, Sean, that's very personal to them. And the feedback, the personal feedback that I have gotten from these people has been incredible. And to know that I can help ease their pain helps to ease mine selfishly at the same time, knowing that I think giving back is the greatest gift that I don't want to say every person, me, that I can help is a gift to me. And that's the direction I want to go. And that's why I keep doing what I'm doing. And I think that we live in such an electronic world. You know, we can't post personal things on Facebook. We can to a certain degree, and sometimes people get too personal on Facebook. But I think that writing, you know, there's so many articles that writing is healing. Writing is healing. And I think we live in such an electronic world, we need the personal touch. And I think people are yearning for that. And it heals people so much by writing things down. And I will tell you, in one of my books, The Second My Life Changed Forever, I wrote about, I was involved in a fire with my mother when I was in like first grade. It was like 1963. And I was right standing right next to my mom, and she was lighting a fire with a can of lighter fluid, and she just went up in fire. And I saw all that. And I never talked about that in my life to anyone, even though my husband and I have been married since 1982. And he knew that I was involved in a fire with my mom, but I never went into any details with him because it hurt so much. And even though writing it down in the story was painful to do, it was also very healing to do. And if I can do that for other people, isn't that a great thing?
Did she survive that, or was she killed by the fire?
No, she survived. She was burnt every part of her body except for her face. She had second degree and third degree burns. And I remember that whole process. And it was a part of my life that I blocked out for years and years and years. And it's still challenging to verbally talk about, but it, since I wrote the story in my book, people have asked me about it. So it gets easier to talk about it. And again, I think that people have these situations that happen to them that hurt and are so horrendous that we try as people sometimes to block the pain out, but sometimes it's more therapeutic to go through the pain to have healing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you, my next question is that, you wrote these books relatively recently in your life. Now, what kind of an impact did this have, this writing, becoming a storyteller, if you will, have on your life trajectory or even your personality or mental state? Because from my perspective, you're going through life kind of doing what you're doing, and then you have this loss, you have this grief, and it impacts you, and you decide to then take a different path being a storyteller. And what happened? Like, how do you look back on your life and look at that pivotal moment?
I reflect, if you will, that I just reflect on sometimes how I have to deal with it in today's world. And again, I think of, again, if people can feel and experience my pain, there's so many things in life, Sean, that affect us. We have peaks and valleys throughout our whole life. And isn't it great if we can learn from others? Because my books are stories. Other people contribute and write stories about a theme in my book. And so, you know, it's great to be able to share those thoughts and those stories with others to perhaps help them when they go through a personal situation, because it's stories of everyday people. You know, I live in Portsmouth, New Hampshire right now, my husband and I, and we're huge sports fanatics. And, you know, and I always use the example, Big Poppy, who just retired, wrote a book about his life story. It isn't that great, but sometimes everyday people can't grasp star figures. They can't relate. They always say, oh, well, he's different than I am. I'm, you know, an average person. What about me type of a thing? Well, you know what? There's 7 billion people in the world, and I have had people from 8 different countries have written in my books, because I think isn't it great that we all learn from each other and we can take someone's situation that they had to deal with and they can say, wow, if they got through it and handled that situation, I should be able to handle what I'm going through now.
So in these stories that people share, is there like hope within that, or are they just sharing sort of the process that they're still in? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. Great question. I think both. I think that people are excited might not be a good word, but I think people are, you know, when I ask someone, gee, would you like to write a story in this particular theme? Like my most recent book was Starting Over, Stories of New Beginnings. I mean, that can be a positive or a negative. And I think it will hit you like, oh my God, I had this situation last year where, you know, I had worked at the same place for 20, 25 years. I just had to start a new career and look where I am now. Wouldn't it be great if I write about it? People love to, we love to talk about ourselves, Sean. You know, people love to tell stories about themselves, but isn't it great that they can put it on paper and share that? Or they can say, oh my God, I had this tragic situation that happened to me 10 years ago, and I went through this dark time of my life, and then I got my butt in gear and handled the situation, and look where I am today. Wouldn't it be great to share this with someone that went through a similar situation? Maybe it can help them get to their goals faster.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I think about the topics I think that people generally cover in life. I think we all get generic advice or generic information given back to us, fed back to us through television or movies or interviews or radio, in my opinion, because I don't think people have the time, or I don't think these programs, television show might be 30 minutes or 20 minutes, movie might be an hour. I don't think people have the time to get into the nitty gritty and in depth of some of these topics the way I think people should be in learning about them. And what I mean by that is, like, in your book, you know, people are going to get different stories, and the nuance that someone telling their story has in it, you know, is important, I think, for people to hear. People, I think, need to get a diverse kind of information gathering in terms of different stories and topics. And what you're doing is different, because people, again, like, they're going to share their stories, and it's not all going to be the same about new beginnings, for instance. And I think then someone can compare it and kind of see this and maybe feel better about themselves, or maybe get a new perspective. Because if they're fed the same old perspective of, oh, you know, you're going to work your job and you're going to do this, and sometimes you might get fired, and then, you know, you might have to start over. Well, there's a lot of nuances and things, minutiae in there that can help someone out, because, you know, your feelings, you're going through it all along, you know, every day, you're, whatever it is, if it's a loss, you're grieving the loss of that job, and you're doing it day in and day out. And people like to kind of give statements of, you know, you should get it, just like just like actual loss, grief and death, people like to say, well, you'll get over it and move on. Well, all these other areas in our life, you know, they're types of loss that we don't get trained on too much. You know, other, we're not taking courses. We're not sitting through, you know, lectures. So books are a great way for people to kind of get that in their head and maybe feel better about their position in life by hearing these stories, because there's going to be a wide array of people. Am I right with that?
Absolutely. And I will share with you, I have in Letters to Heaven, I had an 8-year-old little girl that wrote a letter to her to God about her grandfather, that, you know, to take care of him. And Letters to Heaven was a phenomenal book because, you know, when I've lost people, you know, my mom died very quickly from a massive heart attack. But yet with my dad, it was a year process. And, you know, which is easier? I don't know. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when people go unexpectedly, we have words that we never had an opportunity to say to those people. So Letters to Heaven was a very special topic where people had an opportunity to write letters to people that told them unspoken words that they never had an opportunity to say. But anyways, you know, I've had an 8-year-old little girl wrote a letter. I've had 14 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 80 year old. So I think, like, as you were saying, it gives you a perspective from all different types and all different sizes and shapes of people, if you will, and all different perspectives, which is a healthy thing.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting book, actually, getting people to write words that they, I'm guessing, that they want to say to their loved one in heaven. And so by, like, viewing all this sort of stuff, and you've said it a couple of times that writing is healing, can you speak to maybe what people have shared to you about just writing it in general and submitting it to you?
Sure. On the healing side, I will tell you that, you know, I had one woman that I actually know from my hometown in upstate New York, Fort Edward. And she kept going back and forth with me. She said, Eileen, I don't think I can do it. I sit down. I just can't think of anything. And I said, Jeannie, relax. You don't have to do this. If you have to want to do it, it has to come from your heart. Don't sit down and say, okay, I'm going to do this. Just relax. You might do this at 1 a.m. You might do this at 2 p.m. You have to do it when it feels right for you. And she did write a letter in to her mom in my book. And she thanked me, and I still get thank you messages from people on the anniversary of people's death about how healing it was. And, you know, I'm having a bad day, so I went and I got my letter that I wrote to my dad in your book, and I read that, and it made me feel better, you know, which I love to hear. So still in this book, Letters to Heaven, that was, you know, that's a few years old now, and people still get back to me on the healing process. And in each and every book, even from my first one, Dedication Dads and Daughters, especially around Veterans Day, because of being on the military side, people still get back to me and say, Eileen, you have no idea how much that helped me. And, you know, I had read an article on Hemingway, and it said it took him like 20 years to write about his dad's death, and he committed suicide, which I really didn't know until I read the story. And he never talked about it or never wrote it down. So people are always consistently getting back to me when they have that moment of their loved one that they lost, or a situation. You know, my books aren't all on death, but most of them, they can always be tied to it. So the feedback is just incredible. Even in Pet Tales, I have a book on Pet Tales where, you know, people wrote a story about their pet, and, you know, again, peak and valley stories. And people get back to me on stories that they wrote in that book. It's just incredible. You never know when that moment hits you. You know, it was like in Keepsakes, you know, you have something from someone that's passed, where I had one woman that she was diagnosed with a rare cancer, and she was 32 years old or young, and she bought her six best friends a plate with a saying on it, and, you know, because she wanted them to have that memory about them. But, you know, we walk by these things every day, but sometimes it strikes you differently. I think that person is speaking to you and wants you to think about them in that particular moment, and you look at something that belonged to someone that passed away, that you all of a sudden look at it and say, wow, I haven't thought about my grandmother in years, you know, and you kind of have that little magic moment where you think about a memory. So I'm not sure if that answered your question or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think it's fascinating. It's great to hear that. And then as a bonus, like other people can read it and also help. I don't know if it's in your book or not, but do you ever ask people after they read it to write down their own story? That, so, you know, like, as you're saying, because it's very healing. So is there a spot in the book for people to write down like their own stories, or do you recommend that?
Do you mean after they write their story, do they write their feelings afterwards?
No, I was talking like someone who reads the book, right? So they haven't submitted a story, but then at the end of the book to actually write their own story of whatever that topic was. Is that in there?
It is not. Sometimes people will do that in a review, or some people say, gee, what is your next book theme going to be? I'd like to participate and write a story. I have had that happen where someone didn't have an opportunity to write in Dedication Dads and Daughters, but they participated in Letters to Heaven. So I get that that type of a referral base, if you will. But that's a great exercise for people to do, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think there's a ton of people that maybe wouldn't want to share it with you or with others, but just for themselves. So they can keep it, or they can show maybe one of their loved ones, this is a story about your father or your mother. That, or here's a memory I have, and it's written down. And just the writing process itself, as you're saying, it's very healing. And so, absolutely. I don't know, as you move forward, that's maybe something that you can consider. And it's interesting for us because, like, we're not writing anything down, but we get to talk to people like you and like other people on the podcast. And I see that as also a healing opportunity by sharing your story. And that's really what writing it down is. It's about sharing, willing to share your story to others, because when you write something down, someone may read it. Right? That's the whole point of writing something down.
Absolutely. Great idea.
Yeah. And so same with us. And we see that here too, allowing people space to just share their story has the huge healing effects that I never really
thought
of, you know, like just by starting off this journey. So it's amazing what happens when, especially with strangers, like when sharing your story to strangers or like on, especially here, there's a different level, because one thing to share stories with people who knew him, but there's another, I think, freedom when you can share stories to someone else who's listening that never knew him.
I totally agree.
That's cool. So can you share maybe, do you have a favorite story that just always pops up? I know you shared the one with the letter to heaven from the 8-year-old. Is there something, another story that comes to mind when you think of everything you've done?
People ask me that question often, and I love all of them, obviously. And I think I take each story, I definitely take away something from that in rereading the story. And that's another great thing about my book series, is that they are all short stories. So you can, you know, pick the book up, read a story, think about a loved one, maybe have a little cry, maybe have a little laugh, and then walk away from it two days, a week, or whatever, and pick it up and, you know, read another story or two. But one story in particular I'll tell you is a girl in upstate New York, actually. Her name's Kelly, and she was 16 years old and diagnosed with cancer. And her father, his name is John, and he was a single dad. And her goal was to go to her high school prom. And she talks about, you know, how it became Albany Medical's goal was to to get Kelly to her high school prom. And I think with that, obviously, it gave Kelly a goal and something to strive for and to fight for. And she talked about that. And she talked about the phenomenal medical staff at Albany Hospital. And then, you know, I'll cry when I'm talking to you about this. And it talks about her father, how, you know, how he went through this and had to watch his little baby girl, you know, that she had to get her hair all shaped up, and she had beautiful, gorgeous, long blonde hair. And it talks about, you know, how it just made him so sick to his stomach, and he had to, you know, just go away into the men's room and just lose it, because he, you know, I think sometimes we're so overwhelmed that we don't know what to do. So we just have our crying moments, and those are okay, because we need that to go to the next step. But I think that story hit me because it gives inspiration of a medical team and this young girl and how she did go to her prom. And, you know, they did a video promoting, you know, her whole story and her trail. So it gives people hope. It has a happy ending, and it takes John's deep emotional things that crushed him while he was going through watching someone that he loves and that was a part of him. So it was a whole combination of a story and feelings and success that I think is very inspirational. So that story is probably I know one that stands out. And another one, if I have time to share on this one, is about a woman named Melinda. And Melinda's son, they got called to hospital in December 11th in 2013, and he had come down with a sickness. And anyways, he was 33 years young, and they ended up having to pull the cord from his hospital bed after 5 days. And it talks about, you know, my heart just, all I remember is her writing it down and, you know, the moment that she had to pull the cord out and what she went through and how she used, there was a woman, her name is Mrs. Sullivan, and she had 5 sons. I'm not sure if you're, some people are familiar with this, but others aren't. But there's a reason why brothers or fathers and sons or daughters can't be on the same mission in the military, because this one woman had 5 sons that were serving, and they were all on the same submarine, and they all got killed on the submarine, and she lost 5 sons. And Melinda, you know, use that story as a remembrance, saying, you know, I thought of Mrs. Sullivan, you know, when I was walking down the hall corridors of the hospital, saying, okay, how did she move forward? How was she able to move forward in her life? And Mrs. Sullivan, what she did is she became very dedicated and served the military, because that was her way of healing such pain. And Melinda does that now. Her mission is, you know, she's always doing something with the military and very active with our military by helping however she can. So those types of stories. On a happy note, I have one young lady that was 10 years old that always wanted to make pens with a lathe and a machine, and her father always was dead set against it. Well, finally, when she was turned 12, he bought her a $300 lathe, and she's now 15 years old, and she makes pens. Her pens are gorgeous, and she uses historical wood now on her pens, and she has a mission that she's working on worldwide that I don't want to release, but, you know, she has a phenomenal story, and she made a pen for me after she, you know, she participated in my book and was just so appreciative. She made me a gorgeous pen that I use when I find my book. So those stories stand out to me.
Yeah, and they're beautiful stories, and I think very important. I think very important for other people to read and kind of maybe help normalize their grief, loss, suffering that they're going through. The cancer one, I was thinking about when I was in elementary school, probably grade 5 or 6, probably 6 or 7. And there was a student, his name was DJ, and we all got to know him, you know, we're small classrooms, maybe 30 people, but, you know, DJ had cancer. And at that time of my life, I was young. I didn't, and I know a lot of kids felt this way. We didn't really understand it. You know, we'd never seen someone in front of us going through cancer, especially a kid, you know, watching him get thinner and kind of, you know, getting involved in different charities and, you know, Terry Fox runs and whatnot. But, you know, unfortunately, DJ ended up passing away. And I think in life sometimes, especially at certain ages, you know, people just don't know what to do sometimes. You know, they just don't know how to deal and cope with these things. And I think stories, you know, and people talking about their loss can really assist, especially, you know, well, anybody really, you know, whether kids, whether teenagers, you know, adults, whatever. I think at all stages, I think people need to have some sort of tools in their disposal that they can kind of use in situations like that. You know, there's no manual. There's no, hey, step one, do this. Step two, do that. You know, and even if there was a manual, how could you even then apply that? You know, step four, console the person who's grieving. Like, it'd be like, what? How do I even, you know? And sometimes it's just a matter of sitting with them, not saying anything, just sitting. So there's so many nuances to it. But I think, you know, having your stories in your book, you know, that's one way to kind of teach people to kind of figure out, and hey, maybe this is a way we should do things. And obviously we're trying to do that with the podcast. Eileen, I wanted to actually talk about your loss with your father, because he seemed a very interesting individual. Maybe we could start at the beginning and you know, what kind of a person was he?
My dad was born, and his mom died 3 months after he was born of a pneumonia. Of course, this was back in 1924, and there were five kids in his family, and his dad, they actually wanted to take all the kids away from him, relatives, to raise the kids, and my grandfather refused that. My grandfather unfortunately passed a year after I was born, so I never had a chance to remember him. But my dad was the youngest, and his three older brothers went into World War II. And as I had mentioned, my dad quit high school when he was 17, lied about his age, went into the service. He served for 3 years on foreign soil, came back in 1945, and then opened up his own business. That's what the Greatest Generation did back then. And my dad was awesome. Everyone loved my father. He would give someone the shirt off his back, maybe to a fault at some points. And he loved to golf. He loved, you know, he loved cars. He loved to tell jokes, make people laugh. And he was just an incredible, incredible man. And like I said, my mom died when my father, you know, she died at 56 and my father was 57. And, you know, I think he was devastated. And then after my brother's death, and it's funny, you had mentioned no one gives you a manual. And I think that's so true, because you don't know what to do. You know, you don't have steps 1 through 10. And, I think that, you know, that had a big effect, but I somewhat didn't get into a lot of it with my dad, because, you know, he came and he visited and he stayed with my husband and I. My father built houses. He was a roofer, worked very hard, blue collar, and had a phenomenal business. And he also had a very great gift of visualizing for people's homes and decorating and things like that. And I always tried to learn from that. And he was never negative. He always had something good to say about something. And it's funny, because after I started my book series, I remember, even up until a year before my dad passed away, I'd ask him a question and he would look at me and he'd say, "Oh, well, what are you doing, writing a book?" And I'd say, "Oh yeah, I'm on page 29, you know, chapter 5 or whatever case may be." And then finally it hit me and I said to my husband, "Oh my God, maybe that's been my destination all along." You know, I'm kind of going all over trying to think of all things about my dad. But maybe that was my destination all along. And maybe that's my mission. And that's why I've been following it so passionately. But my father loved the horse races. He loved the track. I have a picture of posted in my office as I'm looking at it about how you can own a horse race now. And that's going to be, you know, one of my goals for next year, where I own a piece of a racehorse. And, you know, I ride motorcycles. I'm kind of adventurous. My father was adventurous. So I think that we share in the same genes with that. My father never knew his mom. And in one of my books, Letters to Heaven, I actually researched my dad's mom, and she came over on the boat, on the George Washington boat from Poland when she was, well, I think she lied about her age. She had that she was 19 in the registry, you know, and I have a picture of that too. But I mean, my grandmother was like 33 when she died, and she left away, you know, a husband and five kids.
Wow. So it seems like you said there's a lot of stories you have of your father. I have a couple questions actually about him. Where did or how did he meet your mom?
You know what? I'm ashamed to say that I don't really know. What I do know and guess, that's another thing. I wish that I had found out, asked all these questions before he died. All I know is my mom and her family had moved to Fort Edward, New York, where my dad was raised and born and died. And he was he worked at a mill as a roofer. And my mom was a secretary there for the company. And her father, my grandfather, owned a roofing company. And I don't exactly know how they met, but I know where that he met her through my grandfather and his roofing company. My father married my mom, left the mill, and started with a roofing company with my grandfather.
It's interesting, right? Like, there's a lot of memories too, or a lot of questions I have for my father that I only, you know, questioned after the fact he was dead. So it's interesting, and you don't have anyone to ask yourself.
I don't.
Do you?
Oh. I don't. And I did try to track down. I found my mother's yearbook, actually. And I called all the people in her yearbook to try to get information about her and, you know, anything they knew about her or my father. Because, you know what, when you're growing up, you don't think, John, to ask those questions, or, you know, they never talked about it, you know, and it's just, oh my God, I feel so shame. I never knew my father fought in Iwo Jima until like a couple of months before he died because of papers and things that I had to go through. And I found his release papers from the military, and that's how I found out. But all these questions I would love to, you know, what was their first date? Where did they go for their honeymoon? You know, and all these questions that you want to know about them, I'll never know. I have one uncle left, and he doesn't, you know, I pick his brain every chance I can, and he tells me stories, and he's like 88, and now they're like repetitive stories, you know, and lots of things he can't remember anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like, so with, you know, I know my grandfather, and even my parents to an extent, to be honest, like, they're very, they tell you when they tell you certain things about their past. And I remember my grandfather, like, you know, I'd have to kind of pull teeth a little bit, just ask him, like, hey, where'd you guys end up in at this time in your life? And, you know, what country did you, like, it's just, there was a lot of vagueness. And I think it's funny, like, you fast forward to today, in today's day and age, and I think, like, you know, the next generations after us, they won't have as hard of a time, because they'll just look at Facebook pictures or Instagram posts or Twitter accounts and be like, oh yeah, that's what happened, you know. But like, I'd have to literally find a way. And also, my grandmother's getting at an age where her memory is not as proficient, you know. It's not as, you know, she can't tell the same stories, like, and she can't remember certain things. So, you know, some of those things are lost, and it's unfortunate. And maybe we won't get to find out until maybe if in the afterlife I can ask them. But yeah, I kind of have that same feeling with certain things, certain topics that just, you know, I found out recently that, you know, my dad had to kind of take a look. My dad had to kind of take care of his family, or the siblings took care of each other, because my grandfather was traveling a lot and my grandmother was sick. Like, I had not known that my whole life. And you're like, wow, that kind of helps you understand certain things.
That is so true, because I understand now, you know, my father, this might sound a little foolish, but my father always called my mother, like if we said something or asked something, he says, well, he said, you have to ask mommy, you have to ask, you know, and he referred to my mother as mommy quite a bit. But I understand now he did that because he never had his mom so that he could ever say mom or mommy. So he was always referring to my mother as, I think he liked saying those words. And I think because of our age, where I think that in your periods of your life at whatever age, like at 17, you really don't care, right? Like some people do about where your parents met, you know, because you're starting to figure out your own life. But when you're 47, it's so different because we change. So, you know, it's, I think it's been so interesting seeing, looking back and seeing the stages of my life and how I thought, like when I lost my mom and my brother in the 80s, we never had as much exposure, like you said, the internet, to help us heal, to help us figure things out, because people just never talked about things like that in the 80s, you know? And I think it's so fascinating to when you do think back of how we used to think and how we think now, if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah. And I think too, it helps us to understand the value of storytelling for even the living, you know, like asking the questions now. And so we can not have any of those sort of lingering questions as we move forward. But usually unless you ask, they're not just going to sit you down at the dinner table and say, hey, guess how we met. Like it's something that you have to ask and you have to be motivated to pursue, and they'll tell you, right? There's really nothing to hide. Usually when how two people met. I know there's stories out there.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, though, it's just, I think, asking the questions. And, you know, hopefully that's something people can take away from here, is to ask new questions to your loved ones and see how they respond. Because a lot of times they haven't been asked that, you know, in over 40 years or 20 years or something. So I think that's really cool. And so on your journey so far, so, you know, with your father and after his passing and everything, and your mother and brother, have you ever had any dreams about them?
I did. And first I'll tell you in regards to my father, and I've only had this one dream about him, and it's so vivid in my head. I have good days and bad days still. And when my bad days are bad, they are bad. And, you know, sometimes it just, I want to be with him and not here to a certain degree, because I miss him so that much. And, you know, and I dreamt one night I was having a really bad day, and I dreamt about him and I saw him. And my dad he was a very good golfer. And my dad, I think I had mentioned to you, he was 86 when he died, but in looking at him, he was how I remember him best. He had, you know, the V-neck sweater on, the light color with the white t-shirt showing, and, you know, the polyester pants that they used to wear. He was probably in his late 30s to 40. And he had, you know, white shoes on, and he looked like he did when he was going to the golf course, you know, to meet out his buddies and things like that. And I was laying on the ground crying hysterically, and I had, you know, my hand up for him to reach to me. And I just, you remember saying, you know, Dad, I want to come with you. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I want to be with you. And he wouldn't take my hand. I remember he looked down at me and he said, you know, you can't go. It's not your time. And he said, you know, it's not your time. And I view that, and I take that as, he was telling me things are going to be okay. I have a mission here. And that's why I'm so passionate about my mission. I think it was a sign that I'm doing the right thing, and I need to keep going, not so much for myself, but for others. And when it's time, it will be the time, but it's not now. So I have to keep going, and I have to keep having good days and better days and not bad days, and that things are okay. And it's funny. I remember I only dreamt about my mom once, and I feel my father, I talk to my dad every day, and I feel I get these signs that my dad is around for whatever ways. I think he responds to me and gives me signs, but that was a clear dream, and that was a sign because I think of how bad I felt. But I remember I mentioned to you, I live in New Hampshire, and, you know, I still have all my friends in New York where I grew up, and my mom had a friend, and I went to school with her daughter. They worked with together, and she passed away at one night, and I said I wasn't going to go to the funeral or the wake because I just, you know, timing's never right sometimes. It's a 4-hour trip back, you know, down and then come back, and I really didn't want to go to the wake or the funeral. And I dreamt about my mom and her that night. And I remember waking up the next day, and I said to my husband, I said, I have to go to Mrs. Fort's funeral and wake. And I told him, I said, I dreamt about my mother in Charlotte last night, and I think my mother was giving me a sign, Eileen. You need to go. It's the right thing to do. And I did go. And I'm very glad that I did go. And it was the right thing to do. And I think because I wasn't, deep down, I wouldn't have gone unless my mother would have spoken to me. And I think that she did that night. So I truly believe that when we need those messages so bad, that they come to us through dreams and you know, through what and through other signs. I'm a big believer in that.
I think that's amazing, because it's helping your grief, and to know that you're still loved, and I like your dad's dream, because it sort of helped you to know that he's still around you. But the big thing was that your life is meaningful, and you know, sometimes we want to give up to go where they are or whatnot. But at that moment, you're not thinking about, as you said, all the people that you're helping along the way and all the people you're influencing to find joy and happiness in their lives and to help their grief. So I think it's so beautiful for you to get that feeling and that message, you know, your life is meaningful. And, you know, if it's meaningful, man, like, I can't imagine what the next 10 years will be, because it's just your path. And when you're following your heart and doing something you love, life doesn't seem as difficult as when you're just in the depth of grief and nothing's going on. You're hiding yourself from the world. So I got to admit, that dream was really cool, really amazing to hear that. And then also your mom's dream to help you make a decision and to correct a decision that you were making. And like, wow, like that's so cool. And you followed that and you enjoyed the time being there with those people and being at the funeral. So I think it's a beautiful thing that you're having those types of dreams, because there's a bunch of different types people can have. So I'm really happy you had those. Have you ever had anything of your brother?
I have not. And I don't know why. Still sometimes it doesn't seem real to me. And I know that, you know, you just don't lose your brother, you know, at 29. And, but I have not. He has a daughter. Who she was 8 years old when he died, and my husband and I have you know, kind of tried to, we stepped into the role to try to be role models to her in growing up. She's 45 now, or 42. Don't tell her I said she was 45. And you know, so we've tried to be that role model for her, and I haven't had any signs or any dreams from him. I don't know why, but I haven't. I'm sure at some point in my life I will, for whatever reason that will happen. I've talked and reached out to him to try to get a sign, and I don't get one. So I don't know why, but I haven't.
Wonder if I don't know if you ever asked your niece if she's had dreams of your brother?
No, but that, you know what, that's, well, no, I haven't, and that's a great suggestion. I never even really thought about it. And I definitely will make it a point to see if she has had any dreams about my brother. That's a great idea. I don't know why I never thought about that.
Well, that was an amazing idea, Sean. I think for many people, they just never questioned it. And I think we're kind of selfish in that way, in the sense that we want our own signs, but other people around may have the signs you're looking for, you know, like they may have contacted them. And it's just about not like who loves who more. It's more about sometimes you have to ask the questions, and maybe your brother wants you to connect in it that way with them, because it's fascinating how like one person will have a dream in the family and no one else does. Like my family, there's like, well, I have, you know, my sister, the kids, grandparents, all this sort of stuff. And it's only two of us have ever had a dream of my father. But I think that's something special, because it can bring the family together if people ask about it and if people share it. So I think it's great to ask people who knew him if they've ever had a dream or had a sign, because that can give you the comfort maybe that you're looking for.
Great idea. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I actually, me personally, I just recently, a few months ago, asked my brother about his dreams. And I found out that our uncle, he considers our uncle his guardian angel. Our uncle had passed away, and I had never heard that. I didn't even know it. So it's very interesting. And, you know, it just kind of, it made me feel good, because it made me feel like, oh, wow, I'm really glad like he considers that and he has that connection with our uncle who's passed away.
That's great. That's great. And I truly believe that one member of the family hears from them for whatever reasons. I truly believe that. My husband's mom passed away actually last year, Christmas Eve. And it's funny. It's not funny, but you know, my husband saw what I went through with my father, and he loved my father as well. And, you know, he was very, it was a loss to him as well, but he thought he understood, and I knew he really didn't. But when his mom died, then he understood more. And even as close as my husband and I are, he still didn't get it until he experienced a loss himself. I don't know if that makes sense or not. And his sister was very close to his mom, and she talks about how she gets signs from her, but he has not.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But just by asking the question and bringing it up, it's fascinating what people share. So yeah, keep asking those questions and asking specifically about dreams, because sometimes people have dreams where they don't see it as a sign, but it's still a nice dream. And so by asking specifically about their dreams, they may even have negative dreams you can talk about with them. But yeah, dreams, there's signs and there's dreams. And dreams, you know, a lot of people say some dreams are signs, but not all of them. And so it's just by asking that specific question, you might get different answers. So the last question we like to ask on the podcast is, if you could have a dream tonight where you could talk to either one or multiple deceased people, what would that dream look like to you?
Wow. I think that dream would be me and my dad sitting on a park bench with a body of, you know, on a lake, Lake George, New York, and just talking and finding out all those details about my dad's life, of things that I don't know that I would like to know. So that's what it would be, because he loved the water. He loved Lake George. We used to camp on Lake George all the time. And I would just like it to be him and I, selfishly. And that's what I would dream about.
Well, that's beautiful. Nothing wrong with that. You know, we need our time, right? Our one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. And so what would the both of you be wearing?
My dad would be wearing, as I mentioned before, that sweater, because that, you know, his golfing outfit, if you will, because that's how I remember him at his happiest time. And I would be wearing probably a Patriots t-shirt because I love the Patriots. And my father used to get a kick out of, you know, watching the football games with us and things like that. And he got a kick out of how much I loved the team and always, you know, kind of got on my case and things like that. That's what I would be wearing.
That's beautiful. That's funny. And the last question, what age would you want him to be at? Would the same age you saw him in your last dream?
Yes, probably late 30s to 40, because I think those were the happiest times of his life. And I just know that that's what he would, where he would be happiest at that age in his life.
Beautiful. Wow. Thanks for sharing that and making up that dream. I think it's beautiful to see what people wish for and what people want. And I think it's nice that you do have these questions about his life, that you want to know more about who he was as an individual and the stories he shares. And I think it's funny because your whole journey with these books is, you know, getting people to tell their stories. And now you're saying, Dad, tell me some stories.
I never thought of that. That's true. I guess it's been in my blood all along.
If you get that dream, you may have your own book, The Stories My Dad Told Me in Dreams.
you don't underestimate me.
All right. Well, that's great. And so I think we're just going to wrap up.
Absolutely. Eileen, thank you so much. I think, the work that you're doing is, it sounds amazing. It's making you happy, obviously. It's, fulfilling your life purpose, but, it's also nourishing you and it's nourishing society at large. And, who can't say anything bad about that. I mean, I think it's an amazing thing. And that's something that, we're trying to do. And it's great to see other people do that as well. Can you tell us again where people can reach you? Looks like I should give your website. UnforgettableFacesAndStories.com. Is there any other place?
Sure. I do have a Facebook page with the same name, Unforgettable Faces and Stories. I'm on Twitter, Faces and Stories. I have a YouTube channel, Faces and Stories. I'm also on LinkedIn under my personal Eileen Doyon name, but it has all of my information about being an author there. And people can message me. I would love to connect with them and answer any questions or just to make the connection with them. I am on Instagram as well with my name, Eileen Doyon, and I'm also on Pinterest, Faces and Stories as well. So I'm out there.
Excellent. So
my books are on Amazon. Yep, my books are on Amazon, and you can also purchase them through my website as well.
Awesome. So please, listeners, if you have a chance, go out there, get that book. It's on Amazon. Amazon's shipping everywhere these days, so you shouldn't have problems with that. Go ahead.
I also, my theme for my next book, and this ties into some of what you do, but it is going to be on first responders, tributes and dedications. And first responders is a very broad market, if you will, and where people can write a tribute and a dedication to someone that is no longer here. And that would give them a healing piece as well. Or, if they are still serving in any first responder capacity, which we have so much, especially in the world we live in today with things, recent things that have happened to first responders, it's going to be a fabulous, amazing book.
That's great. So anybody who's first responders, the police, firefighters, or medics, right? Stories on.
Correct. Or military. So again, it's very, very broad, and they can, if they're no longer here, what a great, again, healing piece. And if they're still here, what a great inspiration and tribute that person can feel that someone wrote about them.
Excellent. Thank you again so much, Eileen, for this podcast interview. It's been great. So people can check out our platform at griefdreams.ca for more information on the topic. Also, if you are in the BC area on January 27th, before that, please get your tickets for Joshua Black. He's having a talk. If you want to go to that, please go support him. Also, if you have Facebook, you can join the Grief Dreams Facebook group. Check out our Instagram and Twitter at Grief Dreams. And this podcast, you can check it out on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and many other podcasting platforms. You could just go through the website and, play it directly off that. That'll give you a link to the actual podcast website. If you're interested in being a guest on our podcast, please email us your story and what you would like to share at griefdreamspodcast@gmail.com. So we like to end our podcast with love and gratitude from us to you. Thank you.
myself in English. I have questions. I have introduced myself. You have introduced yourself. This is a very good conversation.